Welcome, everyone, to episode 358 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and though we promised we weren't going to do Bye Felicias, we're doing more Bye Felicias because we need to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, who were just knocked out of the playoffs last night. We're also going to touch on the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are now surprisingly in search of a head coach, and what's next for the Utah Jazz as well. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is a man who is back to get some Mike Budenholzer slander out. Let's go, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well, primarily because I don't have COVID.
Yes.
That's the best news, I think. Not that I was overly concerned because everyone around me tested negative, so it wasn't really, that big of a deal. But, even then, even though you kind of know that it's not a thing, you still start thinking a lot of weird thoughts because we still don't know jack about this thing. We're about a year into it, and we still have no idea about the long-term repercussions. So I was just like, oh yeah, will my lungs turn into mush in 3 years if I have it? I have no idea. Yeah. None. So yeah. And we just had a major article out today in Danish media as well with a doctor basically saying, yeah, if you had it and you got over it and you think you're fine, that's not necessarily the case because she'd been tracking things for 5 to 6 months, like patients who'd been over COVID for 5 to 6 months, and some of them were showing very drastic symptoms as well. So
great.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great at all. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you are healthy. Anthony was caught totally off guard by me mentioning that last episode. So that was a fun reaction on his part. Also, shout out to Anthony Irwin for the reverse jinx on Rajon Rondo. Truly impressive how much he slandered Rajon, and now he said playoff Rondo is back in full form.
I didn't get a chance to listen. I need to go back to listen. Anthony is a good people.
It was just 20 minutes of him hating Rondo, and then Rondo immediately making him regret those words. We have to start with the Milwaukee Bucks, who will be the number one story at least until they offer Giannis a Supermax extension and he either signs it or doesn't. They were unceremoniously knocked out of the second round in 5 games by the Miami Heat. Giannis suffers the ankle injury in game 3, guts it out, but then re-injures it in game 4, only plays 11 minutes, misses game 5. So, obviously part of them being knocked out this early is they're missing their best player, the soon-to-be two-time MVP. That's just a tough break. But, Mort, we got to start. I have to ask the Mike Budenholzer question again because, going into the playoffs, you were saying, you knew that his reputation of being unwilling to make adjustments, but you wanted to give him one chance. They are the title favorites. Let's see what happens. Where do you stand on Mike Budenholzer now?
Yeah, no, I am very, very doubtful of his continued employment in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
he was really bad.
Yes,
I don't think there's any way else to put it. I mean, look, I regret not firing this joke up on Twitter when it was more time appropriate. But so Giannis played 11 minutes in game 4. Didn't play at all in game 5. So that averages out to 5.5 minutes per game, which is right around the same average that Bud kind of wants him in, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the thing. I just don't understand. It's not just the minutes distribution necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's also the fact that you have a superstar who sees players forming a wall and then decides, oh, let me just dribble right into it time and time again. Why don't you make that adjustment? Why don't you call a timeout, get Giannis over to your side, and you tell him, you know what, this isn't working. this isn't working. We need to use you as a role man instead, maybe even as a post-up guy here and there. We need to find different ways to utilize you. You're the MVP of the league. You have a very diverse skill set. Maybe it's not a good idea for you to grab the defensive rebound and just, you know, go the length of the floor at full speed and just knock heads with three people. Maybe that's not a solid plan for us to win. And his reluctance to change the schemes was just, I don't even have a word for it. I was terrified from, you know, the Bucks fans' perspective, who were like, I followed along on Twitter and they were like, what is happening? Why is this basically a replay of every single loss to Miami? Why are they playing the exact same way? Like, they are losing the game exactly like they lost the last one. What is going on? At some point, you were just dumbfounded at the fact that Coach Bud didn't, you know, make any type of adjustments whatsoever. So I'm just waiting for Bud to return to Denmark and coach here, because that's probably one of those job offers that'll be available this summer.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, let's pretend you are the GM of the Milwaukee Bucks right now. You're clearly going to offer Giannis a Supermax this offseason. But before we even get to that point, is your first move firing Budenholzer?
It's having a very, very frank conversation with Budenholzer to begin with. Because this was quite embarrassing, honestly. This was a real tank job, and I think for them to see a potential future with him, they need to sit down with him and Giannis, and they need to go, what happened? Why is this apparently such a difficult, you know, road for you to take? And what can we do as an organization to make you more feel more at ease, to make adjustments on the fly, and maybe allow certain players to play more minutes? And if he's like, no, that's my philosophy and I'm sticking to it, yeah, then he's got to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it comes down to what Giannis wants, right? Like, if Giannis...
That too,
if Giannis wants him back, I guess you have to bring him back. But I think you're right. You need to have the conversation with him. Like, hey, you know, we limited our guys' minutes all year. Like, Giannis is the only guy playing more than 30-some minutes this year during the regular season. We're blowing out teams every night. That's great. You are saving those minutes for the playoffs. It is okay to play guys more than 35, 36 minutes a night.
Right.
You know, we saw Kyle Lowry in Game 3, like a must-win Game 3, play 46 minutes. Kyle Lowry is 34. Giannis is 25. Like, you need... And I mean, again, the ankle injury for Giannis in Game 3 warped his minutes there, I'm sure. I know he said he was fine afterward. He clearly was not, given what happened since. But it doesn't explain away games 1 and 2. It doesn't explain Chris Middleton's minutes throughout the series. It doesn't explain Wes Matthews' minutes throughout the series. There were a lot of decisions that Bud made that weren't just exclusively Giannis's minutes that were... I mean, it was just like, more often than not, you could not really tell if a coach is doing, you know, a great job or like a mediocre job. It's hard to suss out, you know, who is the reason we lost this game. It's right. Often like a combination of things. Games 1 and 2, it felt like, you know, you could objectively see Bud was doing a bad job in real time. And it was, I mean, the running narrative on Twitter especially was like, is he actively trying to throw these games? Like, what is happening? So,
which just, let's get that out of the way. Obviously, he wasn't.
Right.
Like, let's, yeah, okay. I want to make sure.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I think it sounds absurd to say fire the coach of the guy who won Coach of the Year last year, the guy who was, you know, guided you to 60 plus wins, guided you to the Eastern Conference Finals. But, you know, we've had the conversation about 82 game players before. I think at this point it is fair to say Mike Budenholzer is an 82 game coach. He's great in the regular season. He can establish a system. It works really well. But in the playoffs, it's all about versatility and all about figuring out counters to certain matchup issues. And he has proven time and again that he is incapable of doing so. So, I mean, do you bring in an assistant who can help him in that regard? I mean, you know, part of the equation here is, like, who are you going to bring in that's better? Are you sure you're going to have an upgrade that's out there? I don't know the answer. I think, you know, Ty Lue is hanging over all of this. The Sixers are very clearly after him, but I think if he really wanted that Sixers job, he would have taken it already. Like, I'm wondering if Ty Lue sees what's going on in Milwaukee and is saying, you know, okay, I could sign here and Giannis could leave in a year, but I would have the chance to coach Giannis, and if I can get them over the hump, Giannis is probably staying, and I get to coach, you know, an annual title favorite for as long as I'm there.
Yeah, but would Milwaukee even consider Ty Lue when they have Darvin Ham waiting in the wings?
I don't know the answer to that question. I have the same feeling. I know, like, Ime Udoka in Philly is being mentioned as a possibility for a lot of coaching opportunities elsewhere, and I have the same feeling with him that I might with Milwaukee, where it's like, if you did such a great job, why weren't the results better? Like, Ime Udoka was responsible for the Sixers defense this year. The Sixers were supposed to have, like, an all-time world-beating defense. They did not. So, like, do they really want to promote him to the head coaching role after not succeeding in the role that he was in? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, so here's the thing about that. At the end of the day, you can do everything in practice, but it's the coach's decision. It's the head coach's decision. So if Brett Brown said, you know what, great work on these guys, I'm just going to go in a slightly different direction, then can that be the fault of Ime Udoka?
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just going to go and continue playing Al Horford and drop coverage over and over again.
Yeah, no, that's not great. Drop coverage is... that's beginning to be a shaky concept, huh?
At least in the playoffs, yeah.
And I think
that ties back to the Bucks too, because that was what they structured their defense around in the regular season, and they had the league's best defense, which is great. But in the playoffs, when more guys are able to create off the dribble and isolate, it doesn't work as well. Or if they can come off screens, if you have a guy like Duncan Robinson who can, you know, fly off screens and rise up from deep right away, it just becomes more of a questionable proposition. And I think this is where, again, you need to have different looks that you can throw. Like, this is what makes Nick Nurse so good, is that, like, he, throughout the regular season, will experiment and try out different things. So then by the time the playoffs come along, his guys are ready to throw out those different looks instead of, like, oh, crap, we've never done this before. It's game three. We're down 2-0. We're doing this out of pure desperation. We have no idea if it's going to work or not.
Yeah. How sick would it be, actually, if the Raptors made it out alive of this series?
It's the only hope for Twitter.
Wow. That would be so insane, you know, just being 0.5 seconds away from being down 3-0 and having that record of 0-139 go against you.
Yeah.
And then just flip the entire narrative just off of one shot. Like, OG Anunoby would literally have saved their season.
I'll tell you this, I certainly wouldn't want to face the Raptors in a game 7.
No, right? Yeah, and I know what you're alluding to, by the way. I'm well aware. There's no Kawhi, though. There's no four bounces.
That's true. Well, they just have some weird juju working on their side.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if maybe that's how Drake sold his soul, just to help the Raptors. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to the Bucks. So the Budenholzer issue aside, let's say Giannis tells them, I'm not signing the Supermax this offseason.
Yeah, let's get into it. I know you didn't want to get into this, but I was looking forward to it.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, just what do you do if you're the Bucks? Do you entertain trade offers for him? Do you try to retool your roster around him? I mean, you know, Mark Stein of the New York Times mentioned last night that other teams expect the Bucks to go after Chris Paul, and Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report confirmed that reporting. He actually had his own sources tell him that as well. So, you know, there's a lot of smoke around that fire already. What do you do if you're the Bucks?
Yeah, let's go get Chris Paul. Let's make ourselves even older, right? Because that's going to fit with Giannis's window. Of course, it's ingenious. Let's go for it. No, it's the dumbest thing they could. I understand the allure of Chris Paul. I understand that for one season, he would be very, very good next to Giannis.
but he's 75 years old at some point here. I mean, it's amazing how old this roster is as currently constructed. They need to get younger. If they want to keep Giannis around, they also make sure, they need to make sure, rather, that they surround him with people who is at least closer in age proximity than most of the guys are right now. Like Brook Lopez, he's 32, I want to say, right? And the same with Robin Lopez. I believe they're from 88. They share my birthday, April 1st. Yeah,
April 1st, 88.
Yeah. So Chris Middleton is 29. That's not too bad, but you know, we'll get back to him because his contract is a problem. Bledsoe is up there. George Hill is up there. You know, Kyle Korver is 214 years old. Wes Matthews is up there. Marvin Williams is up there. Their youngest player is Dante DiVincenzo. I still can't say that name. 23 years old. And their second youngest, 25. That's just not good enough. You need to get younger. So what do you do? I think you raise an interesting point in terms of, do you entertain trade offers or do you try to like build a different core around him? I think initially you survey the field and you look at, what can we do? Like, what type of options do we even have as a team? Like, we can call teams and figure out, you know, certain trades, but are the trades that would legitimately help us, are they there? Are they there for Giannis, you know, to that point where that he wants to re-sign? And if you deem it, no, the only thing we can get back is, you know, not trashy, but it's not something that upgrades us, then hell yes, you need to consider trading him. Yes, this is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Even 1 year left, you're still going to get something, and you'd rather stand with something than see him just wave goodbye while he leaves for Dallas in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, they at least have to listen to offers. I don't think they should go into the offseason saying, absolutely not, no matter what, if someone offers us the next 15 first-round picks, which isn't even legal, but we're going to overrule...
Right.
overrule NBA trade rules and, you know, whatever.
The Sepien rule is dead.
Right,
yes.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, they have to at least hear teams out, I think. If Giannis says, absolutely not, I'm not signing the extension. If he tells them, I'm leaving in 2021, then it becomes a very different conversation. Then you actually probably do have to trade him. But I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, he spoke with Chris Haynes after, I don't even know, the story ran after the game yesterday. And Chris Haynes, you know, asked him, like, are you going to follow in Anthony Davis's footsteps and, like, demand a trade with a year left? And he said, nope, absolutely not happening. So I think we can at least remove that from the equation. I don't think he's going to demand a trade this offseason.
Agreed.
But yeah, like, does he behind the scenes do a Paul George and tell them, that's cool, you can keep me, but I'm not re-signing, because that will influence their decision making. But like, I mean, I think, you know, it really sounds like Giannis wants to make it work in Milwaukee. It does not sound like he has a wandering eye. Now, he would not be the first superstar in recent years to say one thing and do another. It's happened with LeBron in particular, and KD as well. So we could be heading down that road. And, you know, as you mentioned, like, the Thunder watched KD walk in 2016 and lost, you know, that was a huge piece of their organization that walked away. They Cavs in 2010, I think they got a pick back for LeBron. They signed and traded him to Miami, but like,
yeah, but that was a very modest return.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the problem from Milwaukee's perspective is that no team is going to be able to recoup the value of Giannis to them. They've built their entire team around him. I mean, he just won MVP last year. He's going to win this year. He won Defensive Player of the Year this year. Like, you could argue, I don't know the exact hierarchy of NBA superstars right now, but he is in the top three in some order. So, like, unless you're getting Luka Doncic back, which you are not, because the whole idea for the Dallas would be to pair him with Luka Doncic, or unless you're getting Zion Williamson back, and even then, I'll save that for another day. I just don't think Milwaukee can get fair value back for him. So, you know, if I'm the Bucks, I'm doing what you said. I would try to retailer my roster however I can to make it more appealing to Giannis moving forward.
Right. And here's the thing that people don't talk enough about, which I think is interesting. You know, by getting younger and thus aligning in age with Giannis, that also helps you in the long run should he leave. Mm-hmm. Because what if you trade for Chris Paul? What if you go out and trade for a lot of these old veterans who are on, you know, the 10-year plus max tier, maybe not max tier, but guys who are in their mid-30s, and then he leaves? Then you're left with what exactly? Like, those guys are not going to have greater trade value in a year or 2 years. Like, then you're just basically sitting there for a year or two before those guys expire. Then you start all over again. I mean, at least if you go younger, you would have some pieces in hand with the possibility of certain players getting better as they age. You would have a trajectory that's more upline than downwards.
Yeah. So who comes to mind as a possible trade target for the Bucks? Like, who if you don't want Chris Paul, like, who do you think they could bring in to drastically increase their chances next year?
Well, so here's the thing. The trade that I'm about to propose does not solve the playmaking problem yet.
Okay.
I would look at what you can get for Chris Middleton. Mm-hmm. I know he's our boy, but here's the thing. He's pretty overpaid, but you can probably get out of him right now because he's still highly productive and he's an all-star.
Yeah.
And the Nets are looking for a third star. What if, and I haven't worked out the numbers quite yet, but I'm sure that we can, you know, we can make it happen. What about a package that is centered around Middleton to the Nets for two of Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, and Caris LeVert? Preferably LeVert and Allen, because Dinwiddie is like 27 himself or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that make the Bucks better necessarily? I don't know. It does give them a very valuable young center to build around as well, which means that could free up a Brook Lopez trade, so maybe you can flip Brook for a point guard of sorts somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I don't know who, but maybe. And then you have a secondary creator in Caris LeVert, who I would argue, and this is just my opinion. I might be wrong, but I would argue that Caris LeVert has more playmaking potential than what Chris Middleton has, just off of his very advanced dribble package.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, when you have that, I think it just opens up the court a little bit more. Now, he's probably not going to be, or not even probably, he's not going to be as efficient a scorer as Middleton, especially as a shooter. He's not going to be the same type of defender. You know, he's not going to be that, but he could at the very least become a very potent offensive player who could maybe help Giannis a little bit more in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good place to look, for sure. I mean, LeVert next year is at $16.2 million. Dinwiddie's at about $11.5 million. Jared Allen is going into last year of his rookie deal. He's at $3.9 million. So if you did LeVert and Allen, I think they would probably have to throw in Torian Prince just to make the money work.
Right.
Or even Garrett Temple, possibly. I would have to double check that. But yeah, I mean, it would probably, you know, Torian Prince for sure would make it work. And then you have another wing to replace Middleton as well. And you know, from the Nets perspective, they'd be losing LeVert, which is a bummer, and Allen, of course. But, you know, clearly they're very partial to DeAndre Jordan there, given their two superstars. And, you know, if there's one thing that the playoffs have reemphasized for me, it is the importance of two-way wing players. I don't think you can ever have enough of those guys. So if you can pair a Chris Middleton next to a Kevin Durant, like that, you know, I think Boston right now is lurking as the biggest long-term threat in the East, depending on what happens with the Bucks this offseason. And, you know, they're going to have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown forever. Like, they're not giving those two guys up unless, like, Giannis becomes available. Then we can have some talks. But, you know, I don't think they would give up, like, Jaylen Brown for Chris Middleton right now. is.
No. Jaylen Brown is highly underrated.
Yeah.
I think, like you said, I think those are the two guys that you want moving forward. One thing is that Jaylen is on a better contract than Chris, but at the same time, he's just so much younger. Like, the upside is there. We saw the leap that he took this year. Mm-hmm. Who's to say he can't take another? You and I have been banging the drum that Jaylen Brown is a better defender, actually, than Tatum at this point. And, you know, he's 23 years old.
Yeah. So
that's only going to get better.
So, you know, from the Nets' perspective, they might want another wing, seeing, like, oh, crap, we're going to have to deal with these guys for a while, or at least, you know,
exactly,
next year. So I could see them having some interest there. It's tough because Eric Bledsoe, great defender. Clearly, Miami was just not even looking at him on offense last night.
No.
Like, they weren't guarding him at all. And, you know, he signed for at least through two more years, and then has that the final year of his deal isn't fully guaranteed. But it might be tricky to move off of that, I guess. Like, that's probably part of the package if they really are interested in Chris Paul. You know, Eric Bledsoe is either going to OKC or they're going to involve a third team. But, you know, the Chris Paul thing is tricky because he's just making so much money, and the Bucks don't have great contracts to match. Like, other than Middleton, who they would presumably not want to give up for Chris Paul, you know, Eric Bledsoe is at 16.9. Brooke Lopez is the next highest paid at 12.7. Then George Hill at 9.6. Ersan Ilyasova has $7 million non-guaranteed. They would have to guarantee it for that salary to count in the trade. So, like, they would probably have to trade Bledsoe, Lopez, and Ilyasova just to make the money work. Which, you know, are they substantially better next year without Bledsoe and Lopez, but with Chris Paul? I don't know.
No.
Brooke Lopez is very important to what they do on both ends of the floor.
And Eric Bledsoe is a really good regular season player. I mean, just look at this year.
Yeah.
He was really good. The drop of, I don't, you know, the whole narrative here has primarily been about Coach Bud and Giannis. But at some point, we also have to talk about just the major drop off that is Eric Bledsoe when it comes to regular season and then playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he gets exposed completely. And he was playing like a pseudo all-star in the regular season. And he looked like he was barely a rotation player.
Yeah.
You can't have those guys. If you have legitimate championship aspirations, you can't have guys who fluctuate that much. You just can't.
This idea actually just dawned on me, because I'm thinking of teams that, like, are feeling pressure to make a change. And, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm not talking about, like, a team like the Sixers that just have bad contracts they want to dump. But, you know, think about the Pacers, who we talked about with Caitlin Cooper recently, and Victor Oladipo in particular. I wonder if there would be something, you know, Eric Bledsoe plus something for Oladipo.
I mean, I'm just looking over his contract, Bledsoe. So that's up in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Why would the Pacers, you know, take on that kind of that type of contract, though?
Yeah, it would. I mean, the question is, what would you have to include to make them, like, probably DiVincenzo, and maybe.
Oh, it's by the way, it's my apologies. It's actually 2022. Only $3.9 million is guaranteed.
Yeah, so it's only, yeah. I mean, effectively only two more years. Like, they have Brogdon, Turner, Warner, Lamb locked up for that long, and Sabonis too. So, like, basically, you would just be saying, we're a small market team. This is our core for the next 2 to 3 years. And I can actually see Bledsoe and Brogdon working well together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they've done so before.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
it's an interesting concept, yes.
Yeah, like, I don't know what the Bucks would have to include. But, like, I think that would probably be my priority, is upgrading from Bledsoe.
Yeah. I mean, it should be, because they need a playmaker. They shouldn't go with Giannis as the primary playmaker. I think we've seen enough of that. The change to me as well is Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said before, he needs to be used as more of a role man, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. more of a, like a traditional center. I think he can do that. I think he can work in that system because he's, unlike the vast majority of power forwards who are pick and rollers, he can actually be successful at it. You know, I've argued for years that I think it's the power forward position that's died. Well, you can kind of resurrect it just with Giannis because he's so, you know, blatantly, you know, obviously talented that he can do virtually whatever from that position. So he would come in and sort of be a playmaking four, a defensive four. He would basically be Draymond Green, but on, you know, super steroids.
Right.
And you can always make that type of player work in whatever system as long as you optimize him. And that's really where I have some doubts about him and the Bucks. Like, are they going to use him correctly? Are they just going to give him the ball in the hands once more and just go, hey, do whatever the hell you want? Because I don't think that's the play.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, he's just so dominant during the regular season that I could, you know, I could see why they would do it. Just because, like, clearly, I mean, that system can get you to 60 regular season wins, and it can get you home court right. advantage throughout the East, and that's great. But, yeah, I mean, they need to experiment more with his role next year offensively, even if it costs them a couple wins.
I would agree. But again, this is actually why I've been harping on the whole Giannis to Dallas thing. It's because I see a system wherein, you know, every weakness of his would be downplayed. So he's not really a clutch player because clutch players, and I think we've reached that point where there's a wide consensus about this. You need to be able to create your own jump shot. You need to be able to create separation between yourself and the defender. We've seen like Jimmy Butler, Luka Doncic do these things, mm-hmm. you know, and consistently so. Like they will make and take, Chris Paul too even,
yeah.
they will take and make jump shots in late stages of the game by having the ball in their hands and dribble their way into jump shots where they create separation.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis cannot do that. Giannis is never going to be that type of player. He's just not. So what you need, more than just a playmaker, is someone who can close the game out.
Yeah.
Because Giannis is not a closer. And I'm not saying that in a, you know, Glenn Ross kind of way. Right, you're right. Not a closer.
Right.
I'm saying that he's not that guy who, you know, he can maybe carry you over the final 5 minutes of a game because he's so dominant, sure. But when it comes down to, like, taking the last shot or the last couple of shots, you want someone who can actually create their own to a higher extent.
Yeah.
Now, put him on Dallas, he doesn't have that responsibility. All he needs to do is basically just use the spacing that is from Luka and from Porzingis and Seth Curry and Dorian Finney-Smith. And you know, those guys are going, hey, you know what? We all stand outside the three-point line, and we're so good that teams will have to guard us. So you're basically going to play one-on-one for 30 minutes a game.
Yeah.
And you'll get 30 points. It's fine. And we'll throw you lobs, and we'll do whatever. It's like that system just makes so much more sense. So if the Bucks could look at the theoretical, you know, fit of that and go, hey, what do we need? How do we optimize this guy? They should think in those terms. They should say, we take the ball out of your hands. We find someone else who can make shots consistently, who can pass it to you instead of you having to pass it to them. And it all sounds so simple when I say it like that, but you catch my drift here. Yeah. It's essentially changing his mindset of how you approach offense. And that's a big undertaking as well.
Yeah, the Bucks just need to find their version of Luka Doncic. Easy. Done.
Right. That's right. But also just having Giannis, you know, accept that he shouldn't be the primary ball handler anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that it's similar to the Sixers and Ben Simmons, like what they went through with him this year.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Where you can, like, you have that skill set in your bag, but we also need to use you off the ball more and figure out how to make you more effective, more well-rounded. Because, I mean, like, Giannis is clearly a better, more talented player than Ben Simmons. I'm not saying they are equivalent, but they have similar strengths and limitations, especially in the playoffs that get exposed a lot. Right. Where both guys, I mean, Giannis is a much more confident shooter than Ben Simmons, but he is, you know, still not a great shooter by any means. Like, where Giannis is right now reminds me of, like, 2007 or, like, late 2010 or late 2000s LeBron, where, mm-hmm. or even, or, I mean, 2011, where the Mavericks did this too, where they just left him open and dared him to shoot, and he couldn't punish them. Yeah. And, I mean, until Giannis develops as a shooter, which I think he will at some point. I don't think he's ever going to be Steph Curry, but, like, he clearly knows he needs to keep working on this aspect of his game. Until he does, you're right. Like, it's not a pejorative to say he's not a closer. A closer just means you can create your own offense off the dribble, and in the half court, Giannis struggles with that because there's a very easy way to defend it. You just literally build a wall around him and, again, dare him to shoot. Like, him taking an open pull-up jump shot, that's a winning proposition for your defense because it's not him driving to the rack and, like, you know, using his Inspector Gadget arms to reach the rim. So, yeah, I mean, they need to bring in someone. Like, Middleton ostensibly was supposed to be that guy, and in Game 4 he was. We saw that he can thrive in those conditions, but you also typically need more than one guy who can do that because then you become predictable. If it's, oh, every close game, end-of-game situation, the ball is just going into Chris Middleton's hands, then, okay, well, that's pretty easy to defend.
Right, because he doesn't have, you know, the shake and bake in him.
Right.
Whereas if you go with a creative ball handler, that changes things up. Like, you can never look at Chris Paul or Luka Doncic or James Harden or all those guys and go, oh, he has the ball, now we know what's coming. Mm-hmm. No, you really don't, because when you have creative ball handlers at your disposal, that means you have a severe luxury. That's why I want Caris LeVert in there.
Yeah.
Like, you never really know what LeVert is going to do. Like, he's going to give that Milwaukee team a brand new look. I'm talking as if they already traded for him.
Right. Well, no, it's an interesting idea. Well, I mean, this will not be the last time we discuss Milwaukee. We will hopefully have, we're going to have Ty Windisch on soon. He is the host of the Eurostep pod. We will just taunt him with Bucks trade ideas for an hour to get him ready for the next year of his life.
I mean, we don't have to taunt him about trade ideas. I'm on the trade that Giannis is going to play the nice guy, and then he's going to leave amicably in 2021 for Dallas. And I'm going to speak this into existence, because here's the thing. I want my Euro trio team.
Yeah, that's true. And, hey, don't forget Boban. Boban's also there.
He's there too, but he's not a Euro trio.
It's the big Euro big four.
Yeah, well, I mean, all right, if we give him 35 minutes next year, as I've said repeatedly, we should. Yeah. I can get behind it.
Okay. Well, let's go to the Oklahoma City Thunder, Mort, since we brought up Chris Paul already. They made a very surprising decision on Tuesday night. In the midst of this Bucks fallout, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported head coach Billy Donovan will not be returning to the team. They said in a statement that they both mutually agreed to part ways. Basically, it sounded like the Thunder are ready to move into more of a rebuild, and Billy Donovan was not on board with guiding that process. So they, you know, it sounds like they very amicably separated, but the Thunder are now in need of a head coach. So, more, I mean, it sounds like clearly, you know, that the good vibes from this playoff run are great and all, but it sounds like Chris Paul is going to be readily available this offseason. I wonder what this means for Danilo Gallinari, who is a free agent, one of the better free agents on the market. What do you expect from the Thunder moving forward? It sounds like it, right?
Yeah, it does. But I mean, not to the extent that they're going to trade, you know, the young pieces. Get that out of the way. I mean, it's just going to be the older guys that they're going to get out and just build around the young core. See, the fun thing is, though, I say young core, and what I really mean is building around future draft picks. Because right now, as far as I'm concerned, they have one legit piece in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They have something intriguing in Lu Dort, who I think has become grossly overrated over the past, you know, 36 hours. Outside of that, they have Darius Bazley, who's intriguing, but that's about it. And yeah, that's kind of it, right? I mean, yeah. I'm not super high on Diallo. I'm not super high on Ferguson. Like, who else is there?
Nerlens.
Are we really at that point where we're still calling Nerlens a prospect? He's 25 or 26.
26, even, yeah. Think. And his contract's up after this year, too.
Yeah. No. But, I mean, you know, it's the long play for OKC, right? And if Billy Donovan doesn't want to be a part of that, I guess okay. But eventually, I'm kind of weirded out by him saying, you know, I don't want to be a part of that. Why did you stick around for this year then? You kind of knew where things were headed. I mean, Chris Paul is what, 34, 30, 35 this year?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what exactly were you imagining here?
Well, I mean, his contract was, like, he still had a year on his contract. And he wasn't going to get fired.
When has that ever stopped NBA teams or NBA coaches from making a decision?
Yeah, but, like, what's he going to do? Resign and give up the last year of his contract?
Yeah, well, that's fair. Yeah, and especially because of the pandemic, I guess.
I mean, like, he couldn't have known about the pandemic. Like, at the start of the season, there was no pandemic.
That's
but
true.
He's still not going to give up.
That puts my point back in place, then. That's true.
Like,
yeah.
He's still just not going to give up. You know, I bet going into this year, like, I had no idea his contract was up after this season. Full disclosure. Mm. So, I bet going into this year, knowing that this was the last year of his deal, he probably had the mindset of, okay, we'll see what happens, but I'm probably out after this. Because I see the writing on the wall. I know even if we don't trade Chris Paul this year, like, we clearly made these, you know, traded Paul George, traded Russell Westbrook. Like, we are moving in a very different direction than the one we were in when I came to this franchise a few years ago. So, like, he probably knew this was his last year with the franchise. And frankly, I mean, other than some of his questionable decisions in the playoffs, he probably boosted his stock with the job he did this year. Like, the coaches named him the co-coach of the year, right?
Yeah, they did.
So, like, this actually probably makes him one of the more appealing candidates on the market. I mean, you know, we are already heard, like, the Bulls being linked to him, the Sixers being linked to him. I wouldn't surprise me if he finds a new job this offseason.
But I was under the impression, and I still am, honestly, that he could have found another job last year. But fair enough. If he wanted to stick around for the last year, I'm not going to blame him for it. I'm saying, you know, you kind of knew what was going on. I think it would have been the classy move then to basically say, you know what, this is going to go in an entirely different direction. Let's split amicably like we did this year, and then you find your way, and I'll find a team that needs, you know, a coach to win now. Yeah. I mean, he's doing it now, I guess, but...
Yeah. Well, the Thunder...
By the way, you said a few years ago, he's been there for 5 years. Time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah. But the Thunder also might have wanted this kind of a season where Chris Paul could be the mentor to SGA. And,
right.
You know, Chris Paul, I think, probably boosted his trade value, too. Much like Donovan boosted his value on the coaching market. Like, Chris Paul playing as well as he did, proving he could stay healthy, be on this type of a roster and, like, be okay with it. And then for how well he played throughout the playoffs, like, they can probably get more for Chris Paul now than they could have had they flipped him right after getting him last summer. So
I agree with that.
They might have wanted this type of a, okay, let's, you know, boost the value of our guys. Like, Dennis Schroeder, I think they can get legit assets for Dennis Schroeder now, which I doubt you could have said last year. So, yeah, I mean...
maybe not. I will say, I think his maturity started kicking in a little bit before last year, right? It wasn't this year he had, like, the big epiphany.
Yeah, but, I mean, this was by far his best season, no?
That's true, like, playing-wise, right. But I think the concern with Schroeder was never talent. It was more so, why are you being a complete dick?
Right, but having Chris Paul there and, like, having him oversee those two guys, Schroeder and SGA, yeah. I think, and, you know, and again, that goes back to Donovan as well. So, like, OKC should feel great about its future still, because now you have, I mean, you know, Chris Paul's got the 2 years left on his deal. Adams is going in the final year of his contract. Schroeder's going in the final year of his contract. Andre Roberson comes off the books this offseason. Danilo Gallinari is the big question mark to me, because, you know, if Donovan's getting this message from the front office, that seems to suggest that Gallinari is probably not coming back to OKC.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, there...
I think you're right.
There aren't many teams with cap space this offseason, as we've discussed and will continue to discuss for a while. So I wonder, I mean, I'm wondering, you know, the Heat were very clearly interested in Gallo at the trade deadline, and talks broke down because they couldn't reach an extension. I'm wondering if he sees what's going on in Miami right now, and he says, hey, I get it. You guys are saving your 2021 cap space for a run at Giannis or a run at, you know, another star free agent. I'll sign a one-year deal or like a one-plus-one with a second-year team option because I want to just be part of what you guys are building.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? If he signed, you know, a team-friendly contract with the Heat and they still went out and got somebody like a Bradley Beal, oh boy.
Would they even need to get someone at that point?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I will say is, though, you know, the Heat window is not open for a long time because yes. Jimmy's going to be 31 this year. Danilo is 32. And next year he'll be 33 and Jimmy will be 32. So that window has to be utilized like right now. That's also why, not to circle back on Giannis, but Miami's one of those teams that's being brought up all the time.
Mm.
And that's why I don't really buy them because, okay, then let's say you get Giannis in there. Then 2 years away, you know, Jimmy's like, okay, I'm old. My legs are mm-hmm. effed up.
Mm-hmm.
Bye. Then what? It's him and Bam, and you can't really win with two bigs. Like, you still need the wings. You still need the self creators. Who are they? Like Tyler Hero? Okay. Yeah. Like he's a guard. He's a two guard. He's a legit two guard. Fine, and I think he can be very, very good. But is he going to overtake Jimmy Butler? No.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem for Miami is off the books this offseason are Goran Dragic and Jay Crowder. And both guys have played well enough that I think they'd want to keep them. And then next offseason, Duncan Robinson is also a restricted free agent. So,
right.
You know, the window may stay open for Miami. The window to make major changes to the roster could close sooner than expected just because, like, they're going to have to... Basically, I think they're going to be capped out after 2021. Like, they're positioning themselves to have all this money, and Duncan Robinson will have a small cap hold that summer, so they'll clearly want to keep him around. But, you know, it gets tricky because Adebayo is also up for an extension. I think they'll probably do the same thing where, you know, they don't sign him to one this offseason just to keep his small cap hold on the books just because... You know, fitting all these pieces next offseason could get tricky otherwise.
Right. We agree that Bam is going to start shooting threes really soon, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it seems like he's got the jumper in his bag. Like, it's not like he's completely incapable of making one.
Right. I mean, that shot is fluid, man.
Yeah.
That is real fluid. So if he does that, you can trot out Bam, Gallo, Duncan, and Hero. That's insane.
Yeah, like with Jimmy.
With Jimmy as your point.
Yeah. I mean, I think Miami is basically the only realistic destination for Gallo. If OKC is saying, thanks but no thanks, we're not bringing you back. Because it's otherwise Atlanta, which... I guess, but, you know, as you said, Gallo's getting up there in age. He probably wants to join an immediate contender, and otherwise it's Detroit, Charlotte, New York, all of whom are miles away from contention. Atlanta also has...
The Lakers?
The Lakers don't have cap space.
No, but if he were willing to, like, sign...
Oh, an MLE or something? But yeah. Miami's going to have cap space. Like, I guess we'll see what happens with Dragic and Crowder. And, I mean, it may be difficult for them to, yeah.
I'm assuming they take those guys back, right?
Yeah. So
they want to.
It may be tough to fit those two guys and Gallo because they would probably have to relinquish their rights to those guys. So, like, is Jay Crowder?
Yeah, but I thought you were talking about the MLE initially.
With Gallo?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, Miami's positioned to have actual cap space.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I guess you could divide I mean, we'll see. But no, I was thinking like a 1-year balloon deal for Gallo and then use the MLE on Dragic and see if Crowder is willing to come back on a min deal or something like that, or even the biannual.
Yeah, but yet you would have to relinquish his rights, Dragic's, right?
Yeah, but you first. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking like schematically.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Order of operations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only realistic option I see for Gallo, other than a sign and trade, which that may be more of a thing this summer anyway, or this offseason anyway, because so few teams have cap space.
It's going to be a weird offseason. You know what really bothers me? We still don't know when the draft is going to be.
Yeah.
I would really appreciate just having a sense of when it's going to be. That would help me a lot.
Adam Zagoria today, he's reported, is now expected to take place in mid to late November.
Wow.
But yeah, it is not.
Whoa.
It is still unclear. I mean, that's going to complicate any of our offseason discussions too, because we still don't know what the cap is going to be. It sounds like it's going to stay flat at 109.1-ish million.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think for anyone out there, like, sketching out some off-season projections of what your team should do, that would be the number I would be working off, not the previous 115. But, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in 2021-22. Like, I've seen a couple ESPN reports now suggesting they're going to try to keep the cap flat through that season as well. So, you know, that is a topic for a different day, and probably a Forbes article as well, because...
Oh, yeah.
That's really good. If the cap stays flat for the next 2 years, you know, contracts already on the books are increasing anywhere between 5% and 8% most of the time. So they're going to take up a larger proportion of the salary cap for the next couple of years. And if the cap's staying flat, that's going to decrease a lot of teams' flexibility. So, yeah, going back to...
Well, I don't spin this negatively, because, look, if we were dealing with realities here, the cap would drop.
No, it's good that the NBA is not following what, you know, tying the cap to revenues, but it's still, like, it is just something from a team-building perspective to keep in mind.
Of course,
that,
yeah.
You know,
No, but I'm saying, when I saw that report, the first thing I said was good.
Yeah.
Like, because I have to imagine the GMs were, like, clapping in their small, fat hands when they saw that report.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, like, just imagine... You know, an estimate of the cap coming in. Hey, guys, you have to settle for $97 million now.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I mean, that would have been tough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's gonna be. I'm especially more than whoever OKC hires as their head coach. I am super interested to see what they do with Chris Paul and what happens with Gallo, because a sign and trade actually might not be a bad idea for them. Like, if they can send him to a team that doesn't have cap space but is willing to give up something of legitimate value in return.
Mm.
Just throwing it out there, spitballing. Okay, let's wrap up with the Utah Jazz, Mort, who pushed the Denver Nuggets to Game 7 before falling short. I was just one of the biggest letdown Game 7s. You know, like, tired legs, teams are used to what each other's running, but, like, after 50-point explosions from Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell the whole series, like, that was just a brutal Game 7. But the Nuggets...
I sort of expected it. It was sort of like the Bulls and Celtics back in 2009.
Yeah.
Also, like, Game 7 was also just one of those letdowns.
Yeah. But, I mean, not totally surprising. But either way, the Jazz, I mean, in some regard, have to feel good about what they accomplished in the bubble. Because, you know, being without Bojan Bogdanovic the whole time, and Mike Conley was out for a couple games of that series as well, to push the Nuggets to a Game 7 was really impressive. And Donovan Mitchell looked like an absolute superstar. It sounds like he's expected to get a max contract this offseason, which is no surprise. The big question is Rudy Gobert, who is eligible for an extension this offseason as well. Otherwise, he becomes a free agent in 2021. So, and Jordan Clarkson is a free agent as well this offseason. So, Mort, if you're running the Jazz, what do you do? Do you just run this core back, or do you explore some bigger shakeup?
It 100% depends. 100% depends on the type of deal that I can figure out with Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
If he's demanding some insane amount, and what is it? If he got the max extension, if I'm remembering correctly, that was under the old cap estimate though. Then he would get $60 million in his last season. Was that not correct?
Yeah, I believe he is eligible for the Supermax, so the same exact deal that Giannis would be eligible for. Let me pull it up here. So it's, because if it stays flat at $109 million, it would only be...
Yes.
Oh, no, it would be a casual $221 million deal. It would be... yeah, it would be $50 million in the last... $50.4 million in the last year.
Oh, man. So if they lock him up for $100 million less than that... That's at least a start. So again, I'm sorry to bang this drum. I brought it up in articles. I brought it up in this podcast so many times. But I bring it up because I think it's relevant. We have seen what centers go for in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if there's a guy out there who gives you 60% of what Rudy Gobert gives you, but at 5% the price?
I mean, that I feel like that was their hope with Ed Davis. It didn't quite work out last summer, but you know, yeah.
No, but I'm asking, would you be willing as an organization to then say, okay, Rudy, adios,
yeah,
or trade or whatever, because we're simply not going to be able to, you know, put that much money into the center position. We're just not. I mean, we would rather, you know, try to pick up the next Rashawn Holmes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the tricky things is, like, Gobert is obviously so dominant defensively, and they've built their entire defensive scheme around him. He is limited offensively. He's not ever going to be the unicorn big who's splashing threes. Like, he does his work right around the rim. He's a lob threat. He's a threat to get, you know, offensive putbacks, fine pick-and-roll threat, but he's not going to pick and pop, really. So, yeah, I mean, the question... as you said, is, you know, what kind of deal is he willing to sign? Because it wouldn't surprise me if... I don't know that he wants a full super... I mean, I'm sure he wants a full Supermax. I don't think he reasonably expects a full Supermax. If that is the price point, where if he says, I'm walking if you don't give me the full Supermax, bye, Rudy.
Oh, adios.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Bon voyage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There we go. That's much better.
Yeah. But... yeah, otherwise, it's just really tricky to figure out what the right price is. Because, I mean, on one hand, you have Bogdanović on a pretty reasonable deal for the next 3 years. So you could probably afford to overpay Rudy somewhat. But, you know, it's 100...
Can you, though, even though I know you just made that reasoning, but, I mean... Can you when Donovan Mitchell is also going to be earning a max?
Yeah, I mean, because Bogdan, Joe Ingles is on there, and then Royce O'Neal. Royce O'Neal is also locked up for less than $10 million a year for the next 4 years, so that's nice.
Yeah, but even so, I mean...
Yeah.
I think you have to put it... Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, but I don't think you can just look at it in a vacuum,
right,
and just kind of average those two out. I mean, because, you know, this is still a small market team. Donovan is going to take up a ton of cap room. You know, you mentioned as well, like, Jordan Clarkson is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Conley's, you got to figure out what's going to happen with him as well. There are many, many moving parts to this. And if you basically start up with all these moving parts and the first order of business is, hey, let's lock up Rudy to a contract that pays him over $25 million a year, that's going to be real heavy real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, so what do you think is the right price point for him?
So, you know, I think the price for centers has changed,
mm-hmm,
dramatically so even. And to this point, where when Rudy signed his extension back in 2016, 4 years ago, he signed for $102 million over 4 years. Mm-hmm. Now, back then, we were like, oh, okay, because the three-point evolution, while ongoing, had not reached the stage that it had right now. We were like, okay, that's a lot of cheddar, mm-hmm. but it's okay. Like, they'll make that work. He's such a great defender, blah, 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 blah. I am legitimately asking myself whether I would give him the same contract.
Oh, wow.
4 years later. No, again, I understand that that's a heart reaction, but look at the price of centers.
Yeah.
I can't get around that.
Yeah.
I just can't. I mean, I'm looking at the max centers out there, like a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns. Okay, not a great defender, but his offensive versatility is almost that of a guard mm-hmm. at the center position. So it just gives you a completely different look offensively. Rudy Gobert, like when he has that one big weakness in the fact that he has to score within, you know, 5 to 7 feet of the basket, and he's 28, so you know eventually. He's going to be, you know, slightly older, mm-hmm. and that could be a downgrade for him. What is that worth? And in terms of defense, you and I have spoken ad nauseum about team defense versus individual defense. What is best? And we have both come to the same conclusion that you need to have a team-wide defense. Team defensive schemes are just better and more efficient than having one guy who is just fantastic, even if you build around him. And I'm just starting to think, for me personally, I would not want to invest that. And if that means I have to restructure the team and the defense, so be it. If that means that I can save a ton of money, and maybe instead of dedicating $25 million per year on one player at the center position, I spread it out and I get, you know, two or three centers for $10 million, and then I redistribute that money into different positions, such as like two-way wings, I would feel better about that.
Yeah, I mean, it almost circles back to our conversation earlier of like what constitutes a winning player in the playoffs, and do you need an elite two-way wing on your roster to win a championship? Because right now, the Jazz do not have that player. Like, Bogdanovich is good offensively. He's not elite defensively. Mm. Ingles, nice, versatile, switchable, not an elite two-way player by any means. So if you have Gobert, you're going to have Mitchell on a max. If you have Gobert on anything close to a max, where are you going to get that third wing, that third star wing, if you can? And if not, does that limit your championship upside? Now, right. I mean, Utah, you know, they're a small market team, not going to be a huge free agent destination. Maybe they're okay, or they realize, like, you know, we're not going to be bad enough to get a top five pick, get a good chance at someone like that. So we either have to get really lucky in the draft. We have to hope someone like Michael Porter Jr. falls for injury issues, or Caris LeVert falls for injury issues and then, like, pans out. Or we have to really pivot. And I mean... You know, they could always re-sign Gobert to flip him at a later date. I think that's not an unreasonable thing for them to do. But, yeah, I mean, it is tricky to figure out what is the proper value for a guy who is clearly so good defensively, like absolutely elite on that end of the court, but
right.
is so limited offensively. Like, you know, this feels like, kind of like Chris Middleton that we were talking about earlier, where, like, we love Chris Middleton, but he is overpaid right now. And they, you know, the Bucks had to do it to keep him, to keep Giannis happy and to have Giannis have a co-star. But, like, you know, should Chris Middleton be making $170 million? No. Should Rudy Gobert make anywhere close to $200 million on his next deal? No. Not if you want to build a championship team.
And one more thing is rebounding, right? That's one of his major, major attributes. But as we've seen, you know, at least this year and probably a year before as well,
you know, there are certain teams that are basically saying, you know what, you don't need that one dominant rebounder anymore. That can't just be a team-oriented thing. Like, the Clippers are doing this year, obviously Houston. But, you know, that need for one guy gobbling up the boards is not really that important anymore, because what you want nowadays is to get out and transition a lot quicker. So teams are actively, for many teams, are actively avoiding having that one guy, that one center who needs to grab the board and then spend a second or two turning around, handing it off to one of the ball handlers. No, you kind of want that wing or that ball handler to get the board off the backboard and just get going immediately. Mm-hmm. Gobert is, in a way, a little bit outdated in that regard, because he's not going to be a guy who just takes the ball and does a Giannis, right? I mean, he's not. And I just wonder now if the time has changed, if what we've seen from Houston so far has also played a part in what a center is actually worth nowadays. Now, I still think the center has a future in the NBA, especially if you're a defensive-oriented as Gobert is, but it's going to be at a different price range. You're not going to be a max guy, like, if you can do that. I brought up Towns earlier. One of the reasons he's paid the way that he is because he's scoring like 26 points a game, and he's a shooter. Like, we're seeing what shooters are worth. Like, they're getting big bucks. And if you can't shoot right now, like, what can you really? Like, it's the swing skill.
Yeah,
it's the swing skill. So I would feel really bad if I was Utah and I decided to go, you know what, we love you, we want to keep you, and here's $150 million. I would feel so bad afterwards, and I would feel so nervous, mm-hmm. because I wouldn't know where that value ended up being.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's just like such a tough spot to be in, because you could assume that this archetype is not going extinct. I mean, you're always going to need defensively elite centers. Like, rim protection is always important. Right. But, you know, we talked about, like, drop coverage earlier being more of an issue. Like, does Gobert have the lateral mobility to hang out in the perimeter and then get back and recover? Like, you know, more teams are going to go five out against him. We saw him get played off the floor against Houston the last few years. You know,
right.
Giving that much money to someone who can be negated to that extent is an undeniable risk. I mean, that's the bottom line. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say, like, no team should ever max a center, because I don't necessarily believe that. But, you know, I feel much more comfortable.
A traditional center.
Right.
I should have rephrased that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, a traditional center, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't believe that to be true, but I also think there are very, very, very few centers in the NBA who I would feel comfortable maxing. And, like, if I'm going to max anyone, if there's, like, the hierarchy of guys that I'm going to max, it'd be wings, then guards, then centers.
Yeah, exactly.
Which puts Utah in a very tricky spot.
Right. And just to round out, like, because people would be, you know, people would say that, you know, when you look at Towns as well, he can get played off the court defensively. Mm-hmm. Sure, but he then gives you something on the other end of the floor. He gives you efficient scoring.
Right.
Like, so there's that thing where if you suck on one end of the floor, it almost has to be, in today's climate almost, it almost has to be defense. Mm-hmm. In some respects, because at least you can contribute on the other end of the floor. Whereas if you're strictly a defender, you can't shoot, you're not the greatest at the free throw line, and in the playoffs, your defense gets kind of exposed because the offensive chain just figures out a way to run by you, mm-hmm. then what are you worth exactly? If you can't defend while being an elite defender, and if you're being run off the floor, then what can you do?
Yeah.
What is your secondary action that you can give to the team? It's virtually nothing.
Right. Well, this is all to say that this offseason is going to be super interesting for all three of the teams that we talked about today. And we'll get back into the playoffs next time. I mean, we'll see what happens with Boston, Toronto tonight. You know, Clippers, Nuggets, and Lakers, Rockets are both LA teams are up 2-1. So...
Right.
We'll let the dust settle a little bit more until we go back into those, but I thought it was worth diving deep in these teams today because I like the offseason is going to be so interesting for a lot of teams, but these will be three that I'll be especially keeping an eye on.
Right. And the offseason is also going to be long, I'm imagining.
It's seeming that way, yes.
It's seeming that way. Well, so you know, to satisfy our listeners just a little bit, let's talk about the playoffs very, very briefly because I want to just point out one thing.
Okay.
Kawhi Leonard is a guy we rarely talk about as a candidate for the best player in the league. For some reason, he always seems to fly under the radar. We talk about Giannis, we talk about LeBron, we entered Steph and a healthy KD into that conversation. All good. Why the hell are we not bringing up Kawhi as a possibility to that, you know, distinction more frequently? Because he is, if anyone, one of the most devastatingly efficient and dangerous players I have ever seen. The way that he just snakes around people to get small hook shots and push shots and mid-rangers and floaters and then spots up for three, gets into the post, rebounds, locks everyone down. Like, he is... I have a hard time describing him right now, just how good he is. He's an absolute monster.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the reason he doesn't come up in those conversations is because of the load management during the regular season, whether that's fair or not. I mean, you know, we talked about him relative to James Harden, and I know you have an article up about that on TV2 as well. But I think, like, going back to 82 game versus 16 game player, Kawhi Leonard is a 16 game player. Like, you're right. Not going to get the full Kawhi Leonard experience 82 games during the regular season just because you got to watch that knee. Come playoff time, there are very few players, if any, that I would rather have as my number one than Kawhi Leonard.
And that's kind of where I am. Maybe it's because I've basically transitioned into this thing where now the regular season, I care a little bit less about it. Not that I'm going full Charles Barkley. I only care about good teams. Mm-hmm. But I've reached that point now where we've seen so many teams, you know, do a lot of crazy things in the regular season that we're like, oh, that's great, that's wonderful, maybe they have a shot. And the playoffs rolls around, and then the truly great ones just go, gotcha, because I'm so much better. I was just kind of biding my time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Anthony and I talked about this last episode where I think the value in the regular season isn't necessarily single game results, and I think this is why it's very dangerous when you're looking ahead to a playoff matchup using the regular season results as, like, you know, I see this on Sixers Twitter all the time, like, well, the Sixers went 3-1 against the Celtics, they definitely would have beaten the Celtics with Ben Simmons. Like, no, it's a totally different game in the playoffs. Yeah. I think the regular season, as you know, we talked about with Nick Nurse, it's like, this is your time to experiment and your time to test out new things and figure out who works best with who and which defenses can serve as your curveball in the playoffs when, you know, your opponent matches up really well against you. So it's like figuring out all of these different things in your back pocket to pull out in the playoffs when you need to, when it is a more limited sample size. But, you know, again, I think the value of two-way wings who can create for themselves has never been more apparent, or at least not in recent years, than it is right now. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, assuming Boston advances, assuming the Clippers and Lakers advance, who are the best players on those teams? LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, and Jason Tatum. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that all four teams in the conference finals have this archetype of player. And it's something, if we see this trend sustain moving forward, that should drastically influence how teams approach all aspects of team building, from the draft to free agency to trades. Like, you should be, you should stop at nothing to get a guy like Kawhi Leonard in trades. You know, if you could flash back a few years ago, knowing what we know now, even if he was going to leave in a year, I think a lot of teams have regrets that they didn't trade for Kawhi Leonard in 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if he would have gotten anywhere else that he would have won a championship, but, I mean, at the very least, he would have gotten them far.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm thinking from Philly's perspective, in particular, knowing that they what they ended up giving up for Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. I'm wondering if they just wish, like, I know the Spurs reportedly wanted Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid, so I can understand why they didn't do that. But, you know, if some package...
Yeah, I probably would have given up Ben.
For 1 year of Kawhi?
Well, at that point, you weren't really sure it was going to be 1 year. But now that we know, you know, just the caliber of player that he is... Keep in mind, when Kawhi went down, and I say this, again, you know, 2020 hindsight here... When Kawhi went down that 1 year, he had only had one breakout season. Like, he had had the 25-point season before that. Mm-hmm. And that was when he was really establishing himself as this devastating two-way guy. Like, he had just begun going into the pick and rolls. So when he went down, he wasn't, you know, the Kawhi that he is right now. If we had known about it now, just the type of player that he became over the past 2 years, mm-hmm. yes, I would have done it even if it had been 1 year. I would have, absolutely. But you're right. We just didn't know at that point.
Yeah. I don't blame the Sixers for not, just given the years of team control over Ben and, like, you know, if they're going to end up breaking up Ben and Joel, yeah. and this is no, a...
I get
yeah,
that.
It's a conversation for another day, but, like, I think they should choose Ben over Joe. So, but yeah, I mean, it, like, would they have been more willing to throw in an extra, like, unprotected first or something like that to sweeten the pot and make San Antonio? I don't know, but they should have in retrospect. Or even, you know, the Jimmy Butler decision is going to be rehashed now, especially now that the Heat are in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think it's too simplistic to say that they chose Jimmy over Brett Brown because, you know, I think behind the scenes, Ben might have also clashed with Jimmy a bit. But it's...
Oh, you mean choosing Brett Brown over Jimmy?
Yeah. You know, that was the common narrative in the first round series, which was, I don't think it's entirely accurate, but, you know, it's very clear, regardless of the off-court considerations, it's very clear the Sixers should have prioritized keeping Jimmy Butler more than they did. Like, that archetype of player is just one that you need to go deep in the playoffs. We saw it. I mean, he was their best player, arguably, in that Toronto series last year. He's, you know, he's brought the Heat to the Eastern Conference Finals for a reason. Like, you need that type of player. So, like, looking ahead to the draft, I'm interested because a lot of the guys at the top of the board aren't that type of player.
Right. This draft is going to be so wacky. I could totally see, you know, someone like Devin Vassell get picked in the top five. It wouldn't surprise me if some team just saw him and went, you know, he's a wing. He's doing those things that, you know, a wing needs to do, but he's so young that we can teach him how to dribble. Mm-hmm. Why not? Let's go for
it. Yeah, and it might be the right play. I don't know.
Could be. I wouldn't be shocked whatsoever if he and Sadiq Bey and Aaron Nesmith just kind of went higher than we all thought.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me whatsoever.
Well, we will focus on the draft at a later date. We will get back to the playoffs next episode, but hope you enjoyed this brief detour into off-season speculation. We will have plenty more of that in the weeks and months to come. Until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave 5-star reviews, and we are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. I'm Brian Toporek, and joining me today, as always, was Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Don't die, man.
You too.